hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars, which fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight, I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They don't know milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying people. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, last weekend was very, very hot in Toronto. In fact, we are at the end of the second week of a two-week extremely hot, humid, muggy heat wave. And although the beaches on Lake Ontario, although Lake Ontario is a very cold lake, the beaches in the Toronto area, Cherry Street Beach and others, were quite popular. There were even some parties that went on there, and of course this greatly outraged the commissars, the medical commissars, of a COVID pandemic crisis, or as I believe, the COVID scam. Not to say that there isn't a virus, and not to say that it's not serious if you get it, but anyway, the insane overreaction is the scam, and the absolute vacuuming away of our civil liberties. Anyway, be that as it may, there was a lot of partying, and anecdotally, supposedly, some people were too close. So, the mayor, Tyrant John Tory, the mayor of the city of Toronto, said, well, we'll show you. So, this weekend, which promises to be another scorcher, many of the parking lots will be blocked off. That'll show them they won't be able to drive, conveniently drive there. Okay. The parking lots will be closed at 7 o'clock, and other parking lots will be blocked off, just to make it more difficult I thought, you know, this repression borders on insanity. Treating adults the way, you know, at least under current convention, you're not even supposed to treat children. And I don't know how much longer adults will put up with this. Okay, Mississauga is run by the woman who defeated me in 2014 for the mayoralty, Bonnie Crombie. She's a left lib, always celebrating diversity and multiculturalism and so on. You know, she's got all the slogans down right. Well, council voted to mandate masks inside any place where people gather. So, you know, a bank, a supermarket, and so on. Well, there's already considerable pushback. So I wasn't aware that it kicked in today, but I was in Mississauga to do some shopping, actually some, had a number of business stuff. So I actually had 5 stops. In 4 of them, even though there were signs, in one of them there wasn't even a sign, but about having to wear a mask. Nobody bothered me in 4 of the 5. The 5th was a bank. So this pushy blonde woman comes at me. You have to wear a mask to come in here, according to the bylaw. I said, well, I don't wear masks. I didn't even actually tell her should be medically exempt. And I'll get to that a little later in the show. Well, you have to wear a mask. Do you have one in your car? I said, no. Well, actually, I do, but no. Well, we can give you one. Well, I said, I don't want one. I said, this is communism. Oh, she actually starts to argue back. No, it's not communism. And I just turned around and left. Now, quite frankly, I had the option to do that because, you know what I was in the bank for? You get a laugh out of this. I wanted to use a stapler. That's right. I paid a bill at the bank machine. And you have the bill, and I always write on it when I was paid and how much I paid, and the bank machine generates a receipt, and I want to staple the receipt to the bill. But that was the sum total of my business, so I could afford to turn on my heels and walk away. But I think it is extremely important that people push back. This is tyranny. And if you believe in wearing a mask, I respect that. I think in general you're wrong, but you absolutely have the right to put a mask on, in my opinion. But what I don't think exists is the right to force others to do this. And that's actually what the battle is about. I would agree that in certain circumstances, maybe you should wear a mask. If you're visiting an older person who is in delicate health, and if you accept the premise, which at least in Canada has changed a number of times in the past 90 days, that the mask may be somewhat useful in containing a coronavirus, in protecting others from coronavirus coming from you. And the thinking is this: the mask will keep particles of water, let's say, or if you sneeze, up against your face. And on these particles of water, there might be the coronavirus. It's one of the reasons it is an iffy thing is that a normal cloth mask is not going to prevent a virus, which is exceedingly small, from escaping. It may be of some use, and I would agree. It you know, if you're visiting a very old relative or friend, and the person already has serious medical conditions, which would make them which would make a case of coronavirus very bad for them, then yes, wear a mask. Oh, it just gets better and better and better. It's the gift that keeps on giving. I've been following two brothers called the Kielbergers. That's Craig and Mark Kielberger for, I was going to say, over a decade. You know, it's actually 25 years. Okay, way back, over 25 years ago, Craig Kielberger, who was then, I believe, a high school student, in just north of Toronto, for reasons that are somewhat hazy. There are a lot of gaps here. But anyway, he made a big name for himself. And his mother was a big promoter of his. How does, I think, if memory serves correctly, he was like maybe a 13-year-old kid. Anyway, he was all worried sick about the working conditions of I believe they were rug workers, child rug workers in Bangladesh. So he created a charity, and even went over, believe it or not, went to Bangladesh, and berated the authorities there for not treating the little urchins better, and so on. When you read this, if you think about this as an adult, I like that phrase, is there an adult in the room? When you think about this as an adult, how does a kid go fly over to Bangladesh? I don't know, first of all, he's got to get a passport. Secondly, somebody's got to come up with the airfare to go. He's got to arrange accommodations. It was never clear to me how this happened. I don't think he ran away from home, so that wasn't it. Did his parents? As I said, there's a lot of a lot of things I would like to see explained. Anyway, so he made quite a name for himself. And then he formed this charity. I think it was called Save the Kids, which later became two entities. Talk about ego, but anyway, we, and Me to We. Now, We is actually a charity. Me to We is a for-profit organization that sells some sort of products and travel, don't ask me how or why, and gives most of its profits to the charity, We. Okay. They hold rallies from time to time and try to bring in stars of some sort to, and they're aiming this at high school kids. At adolescents, kids, and apparently, kids flock to this, or are somehow induced to flock to these events, and listen to stars or would-be people tell them why they should volunteer and so on. I am intensely suspicious of this, and I also see that it generates a lot of money. They recently had a purge of their board of directors both in Canada and the United States. And in both countries they are now majority diverse. That means majority non-white. And neither country is the population majority non-white. I think this is furious virtue signaling. Anyway, the federal government, the Trudeau government, proposed an over $900 million program to fund, to throw money at young people in the, I think, 18 to 30 age range who would volunteer. Now, on the surface, that seems contradictory. Doesn't volunteer mean give your labor freely? Well, the proposal was that they would pay the volunteers anywhere from, they would pay them $10 an hour for anything from, 100 hours of work, which would be 1,000 up to 5,000. There's a problem with this too. If they're volunteers, then it's somewhat contradictory to pay them. But if they're not volunteers, if this is a student summer work sort of program, that's below the minimum wage. This is really ill thought through. There was already another program that would subsidize employers just to hire students for the summer, which may have made some sense. Okay, so when this was unveiled, this program of the summer, the student volunteer program, it emerged that it was going to be run by WE. Now that's the charity headed by the Kielbergers. Now, the adult in the room might well inquire, well, don't we have a large federal civil service, presumably with some experience in running programs? Why do we have to hire a private agency? Well, it got even better. They were going to get $19.5 million to administer this. There was also some suggestion that they would get more money. This was a sole source contract. That is, it was not put up for bids or put up for tenders. In other words, other organizations that might have been interested or perhaps had the key ability to do this were not even given a chance. And then it turns out that the WE outfit has had a number of contracts to do this or that for the federal government over the past few years under Trudeau and taken in millions of dollars. All right, now we're beginning to zero in on the conflict. Turns out Trudeau, of course, is a longtime backer of the of WE, has spoken at a number of their rallies as recently as 2018, supposedly for free volunteer. I say supposedly, we don't know that, but that's what is said. However, and this is, as I say, where it really gets juicy. His mother, Margaret Trudeau Kemper, because I'm sure she divorced Justin's father. Anyway, she has spoken on a number of occasions, apparently 28 occasions at rallies, and she has pocketed $300,000. Yeah, you heard that right. This $300,000. A week ago, WE was asked, had they ever paid anybody in Trudeau's family for these appearances? The answer was no. Well, the answer has now come back yes. In other words, they just plain lied to the media. But it gets even better. Justin's brother, Alexandre, has also spoken, and I think I've gotten about $30,000. So the Trudeau and Sophie Gregoire, Trudeau, that's Trudeau's wife, is a special spokesman or promoter for the WE charity. She has spoken on a number of occasions. She has a podcast for them. As recently as March, she was over in London at a big rally for WE, where, and she came back with the coronavirus, incidentally. And it's said, or at least they say she gets no money, she just gets travel expenses. In other words, though, the Trudeau family has walked away with over $300,000 from speaking at the at WE events. Now, I've got to ask, Margaret Trudeau, what what would be the draw of having this woman and paying this woman for speaking engagements? She's was a drugged out flower child in the 70s when she got involved with Justin's father, with Pierre Trudeau. Her scandalous sleeping around was legendary. She has had emotional and I believe substance problems since then. I'm not saying people don't change or things like that, but I have some trouble understanding why a charity would turn her loose on a young audience. Similarly with Trudeau's brother, Alexandra, who seems to have control of the substantial Trudeau family trust fund. Or is it just the name Trudeau? Don't know. But one way or the other, the Trudeau family has benefited to the tune of over $300,000 from their whatever work it is they are doing for the so-called charity, WE. Now, in ethical terms, that's kind of an issue. It's important. Before they're granted a sole source contract, that is, a contract without a bid. This went through the cabinet. So, interesting questions. Did Trudeau recuse himself? Apparently he did not. There's an absolute screaming conflict of interest here. Furthermore, it turns out the finance minister, Bill Morneau, one of his daughters, I believe, had been a volunteer for WE. Another, though, had been an employee with WE. Now, that would once again set off alarm bells. You or a close family member have directly benefited. At the very least, when the issue comes up at cabinet for discussion, one should recuse oneself and say, I can't discuss or maybe not even vote on this issue because I have a conflict of interest. Which might be fair enough. But apparently, as far as we know, it didn't happen. So this has become, quite rightly, a bit of a raging scandal. And it is typical of the of Justin Trudeau, who, and in this case, Bill Morneau, who is probably personally worth almost $1 billion. These are rich kids. There's nothing wrong with being a rich kid. But they seem to feel entitled that the rules that apply to lesser people, or even lesser elected ministers, about conflict of interest don't apply to them. Well, yesterday I was having computer problems, and I promised you a horrible song by one Caitlin Cook, and it's called White Babies Are Ugly. Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly subtle. And this is, just pure hatred. And I guess my suggestion was, well, What if she'd been singing black babies are ugly? I mean, not only would that be tasteless, of course, but there'd be huge repercussions. Well, here is the most untalented Caitlin Cook with...
If we're all having the uncomfortable conversation, if we're all acknowledging our privileges and biases, I'll admit I'm still racist a little bit, and it's not even implicit, so I'll still say it. I think white babies are the ugliest babies.
Epstein's consigliere, reputedly his pimp, has been arrested and charged with a number of crimes, including sex trafficking. Her name...
Okay, I am going to play that, but I admit, I caught only a few words, even though obviously she's speaking in English. The pure... contempt and hatred for white people coming across is just painfully obvious. The next I'm going to play is Tucker Carlson, and this is about this woman. It's pronounced Ghislaine, even though it's spelled Ghislaine. Maxwell. She was the girlfriend, Tucker Carlson is going to say also the pimp, for this Jewish financier, sexual pervert, child molester, Jeffrey Epstein. Oh yeah, Maxwell, incidentally, also is Jewish. It's a point. I mean, point these things out. They're, it's true. Anyway, Maxwell has an interesting background. Not just her relationship with Epstein, but her background is that her father, Robert Maxwell, was a Czech Jew who ended up in the United Kingdom and became a big press baron. And he leaned to the left. He was in the support of the Labour Party. Used his papers as a sounding board for the left, pushing socialism. But he was also a Mossad agent. And he died mysteriously at sea. It's not exactly clear what happened. You know, some say he fell overboard. Some say it was a suicide. Some say it was an assassination. Regardless, he died at sea, and in very mysterious circumstances. Tucker Carlson is going to be inquiring about here is whether, like Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein, who is also thought to be a Mossad agent, that's the Israeli Secret Service, whether she will survive in custody. Because the circle of people that hung around Jeffrey Epstein, and some of whom, maybe many of whom, were given underage children, male and female, for sex. There's a number of cases before the courts. Eventually, Jeffrey Epstein was convicted back in, I believe, 2008 of this. He was entered into the sex registry and so on. Served a sweetheart time in jail, which is basically office arrest. He had to be either in his home or his luxurious office in Florida during certain hours and so on. It was really just restricted movement. Anybody else, when convicted of such a serious crime, would actually be in the lockup. Despite that, he continued to hobnob with very, very important people, or very well-known people, including Prince Andrew of England, who stayed with him at his place on a number of occasions, and against whom, and he's one of a number of people, that there have been accusations that he had sex with underage girls. I think the whole thing is sordid. Now, Maxwell was rearrested and was in jail in Manhattan last year. In jail, he mysteriously commits suicide. Well, that's what's said. many people are highly skeptical. He's on a suicide watch, supposedly, but still manages to do it. Subsequently, the guards on duty have been fired for, it would appear, gross dereliction of duty. And it is almost, as they say, it would almost be too good to be true. Or too bad to be true, depending on your point of view. How do you get to commit suicide in prison when you're on a suicide watch? The strong feeling is that he didn't commit suicide, that he was killed. Why? Well, there are an awful lot of people whose reputations could be destroyed in a trial where people have to testify under oath. And I think that's where Tucker Carlson will be going in this commentary. And this is entitled, Maxwell be kept safe until she stands trial? That's Ghislaine Maxwell.
Apparently it's pronounced Ghislaine Maxwell, spelled Ghislaine. You know who she is. According to one of Epstein's victims who spoke with Fox, Maxwell is just as bad as the billionaire she once served.
She is a rapist. Destroyed what was supposed to be the best years of my life. She is just as evil as Jeffrey Epstein, as everybody has painted him to be. Miss Maxwell was his business partner in this. She did this to many girls. It was a hateful and degrading rape, and I was dumped off in my grandparents' yard naked and was told that I wouldn't come back alive the next time.
Another alleged victim told 60 Minutes Australia, which is excellent, by the way, about how Maxwell ensnared young girls.
His private sanctuary, an isolated prison known as Pedo Island, where he would share the girls like prey with his rich and powerful friends.
We weren't anything important to them at all. We weren't even a human being to them. We were just another toy to be passed around. And that's what they did. Prince Andrew should be panicking at the moment because Ghislaine doesn't really care about anyone else but Ghislaine.
I was in the car with her and she would ask the driver to stop the car. And she'd dash across to the school or the park or wherever she was going, and she would like write down her phone number for a child, a young girl. And then I'd see that child at the house. And she'd say, they're auditioning. You know, I found a model in the park. And I thought it was really strange because I did see a couple girls in braces. And I've never seen a model with braces.
Well, that's disgusting. So Maxwell has now been arrested, but then, of course, Jeffrey Epstein was arrested too. So how confident can the rest of us be that Maxwell will reveal what actually happened on Pedo Island and other places? Who was involved? Who paid for it? Were there foreign governments? How confident can we be that she will make it to a courtroom? Ed Gavin is a retired deputy warden for the New York City Department of Correction, the man to answer that question. He joins us tonight. Ed, thanks so much for coming on. Are you concerned that Maxwell won't make it to court?
I think there are some issues that we have to contend with. When you think about what happened to Jeffrey Epstein, he supposedly committed suicide in prison? I don't think so. Dr. Michael Bodden, a renowned pathologist, examined Jeffrey Epstein, and he determined that the hyoid bone was fractured, and that's more consistent with homicide by strangulation instead of suicide by hanging. And of course, the cameras conveniently weren't working there. I don't think the feds can handle these prisoners, such high-profile prisoners like Maxwell or Epstein. If I were William Barr, what I would do is I would seek to obtain a substitute jail order, and I would try to have Miss Maxwell placed on Rikers Island with the New York City Department of Correction. I mean, the jails are empty right now because de Blasio has police reform and Cuomo right. has bail reform, so everybody's out in the street. So there's plenty of room at the inn on Rikers. And then we have an emergency services unit that could handle her. And I think that's the best thing that could happen. And the reason I say that is because the jail that she's currently in, the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, is notorious for the sexual abuse of female inmates. And let me give you a couple of examples. In 2011, there was a female correction officer there. She had sex on duty with eight employees. Two of them were superior officers. She also had sex with two inmates. One was a gangbanger and a drug dealer, and the other one killed two New York City police detectives. And finally, we have a lieutenant and two correction officers recently who were convicted of sexually abusing over 10 women. The lieutenant was in charge of the unit, and he was one of his functions was to teach the officers about PREA, which is the Prison Rape Elimination Act. Can you imagine the guy that's supposed to be training officers how to prevent rape in prisons is actually raping the inmates? So I don't think that facility is capable of handling it. There's just too much that's gone on there recently, and I don't think any female inmate should be housed there. And another thing I firmly believe, I don't believe female inmates should be housed in the same facility with male inmates. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well,
and we need to change that.
Right, unless you believe there's no difference between the sexes, in which case you're a moron. Here's what bothers me. I don't think anybody mourns the death of Jeffrey Epstein as a man. But what does this say about the country? When a guy can be possibly murdered in a jail cell, it suggests that a lot of people played along with that. The people who are supposed to be watching him, perhaps officials at the facility. Why are none of them in deep trouble right now? Why don't we know the truth? I don't understand.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because we have corrupt police officials, we have corrupt officials in the FBI, we have corrupt officials in the U.S. Attorney's Office. I mean, just look at what Jeffrey Epstein did going back 10, 15 years ago. He paid money to the Palm Beach Police Department. Police departments shouldn't be accepting money from private citizens.
No.
What sex offender gets work release from jail? The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office has facilitated that. Epstein formed a company so that he could pay deputy sheriffs to babysit him while he was on work release. Now, I was a deputy warden for security and programs at a New York City correctional facility in 2000, and we housed about 400 sex offenders. I never had one sex offender that was released on work release. It's unheard of. So then you had the state's attorney way back when, who didn't even bother to interview the children or their parents. Now, as you know, Tucker, now I've been doing human trafficking investigations for the last 14 years in the streets of New York, so I know a lot about that. And Child Protective Services was never notified, the family court was never notified, and social services never had an opportunity to protect those children. So law enforcement has blown this from the very beginning, and now all of a sudden, 10 years later, they arrest Jeffrey Epstein at an airport.
Exactly.
Now all of a sudden, they find this clown up in New Hampshire. Give me a break.
The law enforcement
authorities that have handled this, it's just bizarre. I've never heard of anything like it. I do not trust the people that were involved in this investigation.
Right. So instead, they're crushing local police departments. Nobody is saying that. No, I agree. Yeah, give me your 10 seconds. Exactly. Ed, thank you for that. Thanks for coming on tonight. You sprung me up. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Certainly did.
Cancel culture strikes again.
That was Tucker Carlson, very, very disturbing program. Well, this is Paul Brum. You're on the fighting side. We're going to take my musical break right now, and let's play some tunes from the Grand Ole Opry, some of the great songs and performances from the 1970s. A little bit of a trip back in history. Hope you like it. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
From Nashville, Tennessee, the country music capital of the world, here's the Grand Ole Opry.
Our star, Fallon Young, with a big hit, Hello Walls. Skip Barrett. You miss her since she up and walked away, and I'll bet you dread to spend another lonely night with me. But lonely walls, I'll keep you company. Hello, Wendy. Since our darling disappeared, well, look here, is that a tear dropped in the corner of your pain? Now don't you try to tell me that it's rain. I'm gonna stare at you a while. You know I can't sleep. So won't you bear with me a while? We've gotta all stick together, or else I'll lose my mind. I've gotta feel it. She'll be gone long.
Big hit, Young Love, here's the country gentleman, Sonny James.
See, for every boy and girl, there's just one love in this whole world, and I know I found mine. The heavenly touch of your embrace tells me no one could take your place.
Love, power love, we share.
emotion. We share with deep emotion.
And now here's Marty Robbins.
Said if I wanted my freedom, I could be free evermore. But I don't want to be, and I don't want to see Mary cry anymore. Oh, devil woman, devil woman, let me be. Devil woman, let me be, and leave me alone. I want to go home. Mary's waiting and weeping down in our shack for the sea. Even after I've heard her, Mary's still in love with me. Devil woman, it's over, trap no more by your charm. Cause I don't wanna stay, I wanna get away, woman, let go of my arm. Oh, devil woman, devil woman, welcome me. Running along by the seashore, running as fast as I can. Even the seagulls are happy, glad I'm coming home again. Never again will I ever cause another tear to fall. Down the beach I see what belongs to me, the one I want most of all. Oh, devil woman, devil woman, don't hold me. Devil woman, let me be, and leave me alone. I'm going back home. Running along by the seashore, running as fast as I can. Even the seagulls are happy, glad I'm home again. Never again will I ever cause another tear to fall. Down the beach I see what belongs to me, but what I want most of all. Oh, devil woman, devil woman, don't hold me. Devil woman, let me be. Leave me alone. I'm going back home.
Miss Loretta Lynn.
Let's make a welcome. I won't stay home and cry tonight like all the nights before. I've just learned that I don't really need you anymore. I found a little place downtown where guys like me can go, and they've got bright lights and country music. Bright lights and country music, a bottle and a glass. Soon I'll be forgetting that there ever was a past. And when everybody asks me what helped me forget so fast, I'll say bright lights and country music. Filled with wine, honky tonks were made for men with women on their mind. Nothing else can take away this loneliness of mine. Quite like bright lights and country music. Bright lights and country music, a bottle and a glass. Forget so fast, I'll say bright lights and country music. I love those bright lights and country music.
Every once in a while, a song comes out that really warps your mind, you know, that puts chills up your arms and your legs, and you scratch, you know, every once in a while. And the little lady who sings this song records for Epic Records. Would you make welcome Miss Tammy Wynette, ladies and gentlemen?
Today I sat alone at the window, and I watched our little girl outside playing with the little boy next door, like so many times before. But something didn't seem quite right today, so I went outside to see what they were doing. And then the teardrop made my eyes grow dim, as I heard their name again, and I hung my head in shame when I heard our little girl say to him, I don't wanna play house, I know it can't be fun. I've watched mommy and daddy, and if that's the way it's done, I don't wanna play house, it makes my mommy cry. She played house, my daddy said goodbye. I don't wanna play house, I know it can't be fun. I've watched mommy and daddy, and if that's the way it's done, I don't wanna play house. Oh, when she played house, my daddy said,
my gosh, that still sends a chill down your spine after almost 40 years. And I saw Tabby when I played in Toronto some years ago. Well, this is Paul from You're on the Fighting Side of Me, back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Make Believe Forever.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.